You're listening to the Laudable Podcast with Frank and Annalise. In this episode, me and Annalise talk about burnout and to counter it, self-care. We talk about some of the signs that we've learned to recognize in our own burnout, some of the signs you should be on the lookout for, some of the things we do to incorporate into our self-care, and some of the things you should look at to incorporate into yours. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a comment, like, subscribe, and share us after the show. Be sure to leave us a voice memo if you're listening on Anchor. Thanks, and enjoy the show. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
I can't complain. So this week, we're going to be talking about self-care and the importance of self-care, particularly as it pertains to first responders. And I wanted to open up with an article from CDC talking about recognizing the signs of burnout and the importance of self-care and steps that you can take. So the article is titled Emergency Responders, Tips for Taking Care of Yourself, and we'll link this in the show notes, obviously. And the section that really wanted to touch on was first recognizing the signs of burnout. And I wanted to start by talking about times that we've recognized when we've been burnt out and what we've done in those situations, if you want to go first.
Sure. I think the first thing I always notice when I'm starting to get burnout is that I just like stop taking care of myself altogether and just kind of retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Like put my turtle shell out. You know, just kind of stop doing the things that you should be doing or need to be doing instead of going out of your way to be social or to be yourself. You just kind of pull back. And the first thing I always do is I kind of just like turn my phone off and walk away from it. And I just don't pay attention to the outside world. And I reflect in, I guess, and kind of like spend more time reading or hanging out with my cats or outside. Just try to find something to find a little joy that to then make into more joy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. It almost sounds like the same things that you use to recognize when you're burnt out are also like initial steps in self-care.
Yeah.
Getting away from the source that's causing the burnout. And just kind of taking time to recharge your batteries.
Right. In a perfect world.
Right.
Of course, there's always, you know, work and everything else.
Yeah. And you can only turn your phone off for so long before people start calling you every 5 seconds worried.
Especially now that I live far away and all I have to communicate is the phone. Because, like, you don't see people as often. So they're kind of like, I haven't heard from you in a little while.
Right.
How about you?
I'd say one of the things I always recognize when I'm getting burnt out is kind of in the same line, like I stopped taking care of myself, I stopped taking care of my surroundings. Mm-hmm. I noticed that like my apartment gets a lot more cluttered and a lot dirtier when I start reaching like that point of burnout. The mail starts to pile up. And usually a pretty good sign is if you haven't seen me eat a home cooked meal in more than like 3 days.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
When it just starts being all, like, gas station food or Wawa or McDonald's or ordering out. Yeah. And it's almost like you're trying to, like, on the one hand, you're so tired that you can't be bothered to, like, take the time to, like, make a quick meal. Yeah. And at the same time, it's almost like you're using food as, like, a comfort, the same way that people overindulge in alcohol or anything else, you're using food as a way of overindulgence to compensate.
I 100% agree with that one. Food is almost the easiest thing to be the first thing to change because you have to eat. You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
So it's the first thing that you can kind of just be like, hey, you know what sounds good today? Taco Bell sounds great today.
And then you realize that you've gotten in a rut and this is like your third day of Taco Bell in a row.
Yeah. Which doesn't help because you're not taking care of yourself because you're not eating well.
Right. And then it just kind of, it snowballs because the crappier you eat, the worse you start to feel.
Yeah.
And that's usually a pretty, that's usually an indicator for me, like to recognize in myself that I'm burnt out, is that I just start feeling like not just emotionally or mentally drained, but physically, you know, your stomach hurts, you're always tired, everything aches. It's like, oh, maybe I should drink a glass of water and eat a vegetable.
Yep.
So I wanted to talk about like what we do personally to deal with our like burnout and to take steps in self-care. You mentioned that you usually try to like kind of reflect inward and spend time with your cats and spend time doing things that bring you more joy. Is there anything else that you do that you think uniquely plays into like recovering from burnout?
I think I try to spend a lot more time sleeping. I know I often find myself awake at night and having trouble sleeping. So I've had multiple problems with insomnia for like the past 10 or so years. So there's a lot of time that I just like can't sleep or don't sleep or go days without sleeping when I really shouldn't. No one should. So I try really hard to go to bed early and lay in bed and try and get rest when I can to make up for some of that, or at least to give my body a chance to just hang out for a little bit.
Right. I agree on like one of the causes of burnout being like that, or like one of the symptoms of it being that you go for like days and days with little to no sleep. I wish I was as good at like sitting down and finally like regulating my sleep schedule and trying to recover from that. But it's more, it seems like it's more often than not that my body ends up doing that for me. Like after a couple of days, it's finally like, all right, you're going to sleep for 12 hours now.
When you don't have the time or intend to.
Right. It's all, it's always when like you have to be up super early the next morning when you finally, but then like when you're ready to go to bed and you've allowed yourself all this time, all you can do is just sit there and stare at the ceiling or watch Facebook videos. So would you say that with self-care that you've made like your family a part of your self-care system at all?
Actually, no, which might not be a good answer, but is the honest answer.
Well, that's what we're here for, is honesty.
It's true. A lot of times when I get overwhelmed, I really just kind of like seclude myself because I constantly overschedule myself and overwork myself and don't let myself do nothing or relax or pull back. Mm-hmm. So when I need to fix something or take care of something, the first thing I do is just kind of block everyone else out. And poor Rose, my wife too, sometimes I even push her away or block her out. And I know that's probably not the healthiest thing to do, but sometimes you just need to fix yourself before you can communicate what you need to someone else.
Yeah, that's fair. I think we all handle being burnt out and handle like recovering from that in our own way.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, and I think it's all situationally dependent too. I think like when it's after like a really stressful incident or like a high stress, high intensity incident, I think it makes more sense to rely on like a family system or like your friends. But I think when it's like the day to day, like you've been running yourself ragged, sometimes all you really can do is just batten down and take the time to care about yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I think especially like, I'd say like both of us have a personality where we tend to lean more towards caring for others.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times, even when it's time for us to self-care, if we involve other people, we always end up naturally gravitating towards caring for them.
Yep, that's very true.
Yeah, and it's not a knock against those other people.
No,
it's
not
just
at
the
all.
Type of personality that we have is we gravitate fixers. Towards. Right, we're always when there's a problem, it's always our job to fix it, and we're always looking for problems to fix.
Oh yeah,
and I think.
I was just going to say, I'm interested in how, like you were asking me about family and stuff, how that works for you having a roommate, like how you, when you need those moments to yourself, do you talk to him about it or do you just kind of do your own thing or?
I think a lot of times I do my own thing.
Yeah.
with him, with both of us being on a night schedule, with him not getting home until around like 1 a.m. and me not getting home until around 7 a.m. And then by the time he wakes up to go to work, or by the time I wake up to go to work, he's already at work.
Right.
There could be like stretches where we go like a week without even like seeing each other.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah. where like we'll still communicate obviously through like texting and Facebook and sending memes back and forth. But as far as like actually sitting face to face and having a conversation, there's times where we can go that long without doing that. I also think that there's some times where, and I have to remind myself not to take it out on him, but there's times where like I've been going and going all week. Like our last weekend, or the weekend before last, is a great example. We had basically been going and going all week. It was 4th of July. We were bouncing around from place to place, going to fireworks and parades and everything. And it got to be around Sunday, and I just needed time to myself.
Yeah.
And he had done something as like simple as like asking if I wanted to go get dinner. And I almost got really frustrated because I just finally like sat down and like started to like take some time to reflect inward when he asked this. And I had to remind myself that it's not his fault, you know,
right?
He's just being a really good friend, and I can't expect him to be able to read my mind and know what's going on.
Right.
And I think
it's hard.
Yeah, it really is. Especially like, I mean, we've gotten to a point, and I'm sure you and Rose have definitely gotten to a point being friends, dating, engaged, married for so long. And me and Dave have been friends for the last 5 or so years now. More than that, actually, since like 2012 or before that.
Wow. I didn't realize it had been that long.
Yeah, we met my first year of high school, so it would have been 2009, actually. So 10 years now. Where like...
Good friend.
Yeah. We put up with each other's crap. But we've gotten to this point where we can kind of read each other and know when the other person needs space. But then there are some times where, like, if neither of us sends up a red flag, you know, you can't expect the other to know. There's times where he'll get home and he'll be really frustrated from work or from whatever, and I'll make a joke and he'll make it clear that he's obviously not in the mood for it. And I just kind of have to, like, back off and not take it personally, you know.
Which is a whole nother battle.
Yeah. It really is. Because a lot of times, like, we're defensive people, you know. Like, that's another personality trait that I think a lot of us have. Is, like, we like to go on the defense anytime that we feel attacked. And we have to remind ourselves a lot that it's not personal.
Right.
But there's definitely times where we do lean on each other. Even though we may not, like, being guys, like we've talked about before, like, the whole, like, machismo, like, stigma that there is. No matter how much we acknowledge it, sometimes it's hard to actually defeat in our own personal lives. It's almost, like, hardwired into us as guys.
Right. One of those things easier to say than it is to do.
Right. We're not, me and him are not always the most open with each other. Like, we'll have, like, these really strong heart-to-heart moments where we discuss things, and then there will be moments where it's something as like nonchalant as like talking about our days, and it's like, I don't want to bother him with that, or he doesn't care about that, like, you know. Or it just feels like not personal. You don't want to involve another person in your personal struggles.
Right. You don't want anyone else to see into that weakness or into that moment where you're not 100% yourself.
Right. There will be times where we'll have, like, it'll be, like, 3 a.m. and we have, like, these really long discussions about how one of us is feeling. And for no reason whatsoever, like, it's a great, something seems to click in one of our minds. It's like, all right, let's get all this, like, hand-holding and hugging and friendship circle stuff out of the way. Let's get this over with, you know. Let's go play some Call of Duty, drink a beer or something.
The man stuff.
What would you say is something that you would like in the future integrate into your self-care system, or something that you're working on, but you may not necessarily have down pat yet?
So right now, I think my biggest struggle with this is working out. I think that some level of exercise, whether it's just like walking around here and there a little bit during the day is really helpful. And I think that I don't think anyone disagrees that working out is bad or is good for you. But I know as soon as I stop feeling great and start just kind of internalizing and isolating myself, I stop being active and I stop going out and doing things. And I need to work on keeping that going even when my brain isn't going.
Right. I think as well. I think it's a, I think on that same topic, it's like, it's this really weird like flaw that a lot of us have where it's when we feel great about ourselves, that's when we want to get out. That's when we want to get, enjoy the sun. That's when we want to eat a salad or go for a hike or go for a run or do CrossFit if you're that insane. And then as soon as we start to feel crappy for some reason, that's when we stop. When we don't realize is that that's when you need to keep going the most, you know?
Right.
That's when
better.
That's when you need that release of endorphins that comes with running or hiking, like sweating, you know, just getting that sort of, getting the heart pumping, that sort of thing.
I can get into like a really good routine where I start working out a little bit every day. It doesn't have to be anything major, maybe working out a little bit harder, doing something longer, a couple days a week. Mm-hmm. I could do that for like 2 months and everything's going great. And I have one bad day and it's like, it takes me back a whole nother week, month, whatever it ends up being. It's definitely a personal struggle of mine.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I have that issue of going back to one earlier when we were talking about eating and overindulgence with food. I have this problem where I'll be on a really good track as far as like keeping track of my calories and counting macros and keeping track of my nutrition and making sure that the meals I eat are balanced. And then I'll get in a funk and I'll turn to food for comfort. And next thing you know, it's not as far down the scale as like binge eating where you're eating a lot in like one sitting or that sort of thing. But you stop being motivated to go to the grocery store and buy food. It becomes a lot easier to live off of like microwave chicken tenders or McDonald's or ramen, you know. I think one thing aside from that that I need to work on more is, like we said before, being more open about when I need help and not realizing that every struggle is not a struggle that I have to go through alone. Even if I don't lean on someone to help me, being able to just vent and let someone know, like, hey, this is what I'm going through right now. Like, having the courage to tell someone, like, when people ask, hey, how are you doing today? Like, having the courage to say, well, you know, I'm not the best. Like, I'm kind of in a bad place right now. And not really expecting anyone to, like, not really expecting help. If you get help, that's great, but not really expecting help to come out of that. But just knowing that, like, talking about it is helping.
Yeah.
You're acknowledging the problem. And like they say, like, you can't treat a problem if you don't acknowledge that it's going on.
That's like you've been saying, all these traits we have, we're good at avoiding.
Yes. Really. We're really good at avoiding, compartmentalizing, and internalizing.
Yep.
And I think that's a symptom of most people that are drawn to, or that's a fault of most people that are drawn to the careers that we're in with being a first responder and that sort of thing. Where we're these type, like, I don't want to say type A because it sounds kind of cliche, but we have a personality type where it's our job to help other people, you know?
Right.
And I think a lot of us even get into it because of that, where like it's an externalization where if we can't help ourselves, at least we can help other people, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's astounding and it's jaw-dropping when you look at the statistics prior to like traumatic events occurring in emergency services. When you look at how many people in emergency services come into the career suffering from anxiety or depression or some sort of other mental illness, you know, and it's something that's not really talked about, whether it be like a paramedic that has ADHD and struggles to focus without medication, or it be the 911 dispatcher that gets anxious and has their heart racing before every call, that sort of thing. It's not really talked about how much mental illness affects our community prior to some external event in that career. And I think it goes back to like it goes back to people that the same people that are drawn to this are the people that often need help the most.
It's sad, but you're absolutely right. It's hard to get the people to speak up or admit what's going on with themselves, let alone to other people. And then to talk about it on a grander scale is even harder.
Right. I think a part of it also comes down to like what I've heard referred to as like Wile E. Coyote syndrome. Like, you watch Looney Tunes and Wile E. Coyote's chasing the Roadrunner, and he runs off of the cliff, and it's not until he looks down and sees the cliff out from under him that he falls. And I think a lot of us fear that the same thing is going to happen with dealing with our mental illness, where as long as we don't acknowledge it and we don't stop moving and we keep going and we don't let those thoughts sink in, it doesn't exist, you know? Like, we just think that we can just keep, like, brushing it off and keep pushing it to the side and pushing it to the back of our mind, and it's going to help. But really, it's snowballing a lot of times. It's building up, and it's building up. And eventually, that pressure's got to release somewhere. And if you don't find a good self-care routine and a good way to slowly release that pressure over time, then it's going to come out all at once and in a bad way.
Yeah, and the interesting part about all that, even more related to being a first responder, is the fact that all of the steps that we can take to get better sometimes don't work with our schedule or our lifestyle. Sometimes you can't balance work and home. Sometimes you can't handle your stress because it's just constantly coming in. Sometimes you don't get to eat all day, or if you do get a chance to eat, you get 5 minutes, so you grab whatever's closest.
That's absolutely true.
It's a giant cycle.
Yeah, it's like when you look at someone like me, or a lot of first responders in the community, where they're working one or two, like they're working two or more jobs. Where do you find the time to have a balanced sleep schedule? You know,
right?
I bounce between working 12-hour shifts at night and working 8-hour shifts at a second job during the day. And it's like, look at my schedule and tell me where exactly I'm supposed to find the time to get to squeeze in like a solid 8 hours of sleep when I need it.
Right. That's hard.
While still maintaining like a healthy family life and a healthy relationship with my friends.
Yeah.
One of my favorite pages on Instagram right now is Police Fitness Nutrition. And, okay. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but one of the things he does that I really like is he looks at all the places. I'm pretty sure he's based in southeastern U.S. because he's been to Wawa and he's posted about Wawa. So he's at East U.S. or he's in Florida, in which case pray for him because it's like 200 degrees down there right now. I like that he does these features where he'll go into like a gas station or a fast food restaurant and he'll show like, hey, like, there's healthy options. Like, you don't always need to get the chicken cheesesteak or the fat, juicy, greasy burger or the...
Even though you want to.
Right. Right. Yeah. It'll show like, hey, like, you know, this salad at Wawa, like, it's actually pretty high quality. And it's got all of your, like, major, like, nutritional values. And it's a lot better option. You're going to feel, like, better fueled for the day as opposed to getting, like, the buffalo chicken mac and cheese. We're not sponsored by Wawa, by the way.
No, sadly.
That's got to be really miss being out there, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I cannot wait when we come home to have some Wawa.
That and cheesesteaks.
Yep. That's number one on my list.
But
maybe even on the way home from the airport.
Just don't get caught by in the airport that are trying to I think it's John's Cheesesteaks or one of the bigger cheesesteak brands has branched off into like franchise locations, and they have one in the airport now. And it's just to get like people not from Philly to want to buy a cheesesteak just so they can say they had a Philly cheesesteak.
For like $7 extra.
Right. $7 extra and the meat's horrible. They're not using Del Frisco roll.
Oh man. I had, so we went to, sorry to go off track on cheesesteaks, but while we're talking about them, we went to a Mariners game the other day and they had a Philadelphia cheesesteak stand and it says Philadelphia cheesesteak, not just cheesesteaks, Philadelphia.
Right.
No, wrong roll. Meat was all right. Cheese was wrong. There were other things in there that shouldn't have been in there. I'm so ready for a real one.
We spent the first half of this conversation talking about overindulgence in food. And now we're talking about cheesesteaks. But it brings up a really good point that while you should be cautious of overindulgence, sometimes a really big part of self-care is giving yourself that little reward. If you've been really good with eating healthy and you haven't fallen victim to the binge eating or the eating crappy while you're in a state of burnout, maybe that's what you need sometimes. Yeah. Is to like everything give yourself a reward. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes
you can't. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say sometimes you need to give yourself a reward and get those endorphins flowing a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Eating too healthy sometimes can make you just as miserable. So
yeah, there's been points where like I've tried to eat really healthy and it's been like 7 days straight of grilled chicken breasts and white rice and asparagus or steamed vegetables, and you're setting yourself up for failure when you do that, I feel like. Yeah. Because you're gonna reach a point where you no longer want to do it and you're gonna overcompensate by eating terribly, just nonstop. Right. And it just leads to you falling off of that wagon and falling back into a state where that's all you're eating.
Yeah.
And another really big part of self-care that I feel like we need to stress before getting into this, that moderation is the key here. It's about enjoying a little bit while not like overindulging. And that's alcohol, honestly. Like, I don't think there's a problem with at the end of the day sitting back and having a beer. As long as you recognize that this is not a constant thing, this is not something that you do every night, this doesn't become part of your every night routine. Today was kind of a rough day. I'm gonna sit down while being mindful of the fact that I don't want to overindulge. I'm gonna have this beer and take a little bit of time to reflect inwards. Or if alcohol isn't your thing, some people will try to avoid caffeine. Some people don't use caffeine as a source of energy, which if you are one of those people that doesn't, I don't know how you're, I don't believe you're human, but and they view like something like coffee or tea as less of a morning routine and more of a ritual for self-care. It's the guy that sits out on his front porch or sits out on his balcony with coffee and the newspaper or a good book and just spends a few moments like reflecting. And there is a bit of like ritualism to self-care routines. Like it's like having like you come home, you get undressed, you put on the pajamas, you open a beer, pour yourself like a glass of wine in moderation. Once again, can't stress that enough. And you sit down and you just kind of, you watch like, you catch up on TV or you read a good book or you just sit on the porch and watch the sunset. Those are all valid forms of self-care as long as you're not letting them drift into the realm of destructive behavior.
Right. I think intent has a lot to do with that.
Exactly.
Like if you're sitting down there with the intent to drink, to forget what you're thinking about or to do that kind of stuff, you're not going to regulate it. You're already too far along what your brain is telling you to do that you're just going to indulge and not think about it, because one's not going to be enough and two isn't going to be enough. And when do you stop?
Right. It's self-medication. It's self-medication in the same way that people that use narcotics are self-medicating, that people that suffer from alcoholism are self-medicating, that people that suffer from gambling addiction, anything where they're just constantly chasing that release of endorphins, you know. But that being said, like you said, it's all about the intent. If you're approaching it from the concept of you as a way to every once in a while unwind and reward yourself for getting through the day, I think it's acceptable. But you just always have to be aware of the frequency that you're doing it, the volume that you're and everything that goes along with that. I wanted to talk about we've talked about kind of some of the signs of burnout, but I wanted to talk more about like that we personally experience. I kind of mentioned that one of the things I always feel is like I stop being just emotionally and mentally drained, but start being like physically drained as well. Like you start to notice that the mentality you have is actually taking like a physical toll on your body. And I wanted to know if you felt the same or if you had experienced anything similar to that.
I definitely think that that's true for me. I know one of the first things I noticed too is that I just like lose my ability to focus and concentrate. And everything that is even a little task seems like a giant responsibility or a giant thing that I have to deal with instead of just being what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the biggest indicator. When I just sit down to work on homework, when I get home from work or something else, and I look at the screen and the words just doesn't connect.
Right. It's like you find your sentence over and over and over again, but like you understand the words, but it's not making sense.
Right. Or it's not retaining.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's all really good points that both of us have made, I feel like. And it's I don't think that self-care is something that you ever really master. I think it's constantly evolving. You're constantly figuring out what works and doesn't work. Something that may work for self-care one day may not work for the other day.
Yeah.
And you also have to understand that burnout is not one specific ailment.
No.
Burnout is never always the same, even in a single individual. And you have to treat self-care as like a medicine and tailor that medicine, tailor the dosage, tailor the volume to the incident or to the case of burnout. I think that's a really good way of like also minding overindulgence and keeping an eye on that.
I agree. I think one of the hardest things to do related to self-care is like learning how to say no, whether it's no to that second drink, whether it's saying no when someone asks you to go do something, whether it's just standing up for yourself and being like, you know, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. No. Sometimes it's saying no to picking up that extra shift or saying no to staying late for a coworker.
Yeah.
You know, like we said, like we're the fixers. A symptom of that too, is a lot of times we're the people pleasers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard for us to not say no.
Right. That's the one thing I've been trying to work on over this past year or two consciously is saying no more instead of just being like, yeah, okay, sure. And then changing my whole life around for everyone else all the time.
Yeah. And a big part of that for us as well as being advocates of health is not taking that no personally, you know?
Right.
There's been times where I've asked people to pick up shifts for me or switch with me, and they said, no, I can't do it. And you can't take it personally.
Right.
You know, you have to understand that on their journey towards self-care.
Yeah. And saying yes to an extra shift is saying yes to 12, even more hours sometimes. And that's not a little bit of a change.
Right. That's not just cutting your time off in half. If you have, right. If you're picking up a day that you're normally off for, that's not just cutting your time off in half. That's also increasing your work.
One of the things that I saw when I was looking over different things about self-care the other day, just preparing for this, was I saw a couple different posts or things from people where they're kind of negative about self-care and how they say it's like an excuse or it's just a spa day or just a way to like indulge in yourself and not do your responsibilities. And I really wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
I think that's a very close-minded opinion.
I agree.
And I don't mean to sound, if I come off sounding pretty like kind of aggro with that, I don't mean to, but I think that people that say stuff like that need to look at their self-care routine. I think that those people are the people that oftentimes need it the most. I watched a documentary a while back. It was parents from the 1950s talking about raising their kids. And a big theme that I noticed was like, the movement in the 1960s and early 1970s, whether you want to call it like the peace and love movement or the hippie movement or that sort of thing, was a direct response to their parents never understanding, like, expression of emotions. Like, it was always, I have to go to work to create a better life for my child. I don't have time to be touchy-feely and lovey-dovey with them, too. And it scarred a generation of parents, basically, or a generation of kids that basically grew up to overcompensate when we start to see, like, the 1980s and the 90s with the emergence of, like, what's called helicopter parenting. It's all this, like, self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think that's the thing with people self-care, too. They're the people that need self-care the most a lot of times. Yeah. They're the ones that are always the, like, type A, never stop working individual. And I feel like a lot of times it's that can't stop working, can't stop running, can't stop moving. Otherwise, these thoughts are going to catch up.
Right.
You know, a lot of our parents' generations had the same outlook where it was like, well, can't you just not be sad? Like, what's depression? You don't have anything to be sad about.
Right.
They're like, well, you're depressed. Well, maybe you should just go for a hike. It's like, yeah. No, Mom, I need medication.
Let me just cure this chemical imbalance with a smile and a cupcake.
It's like, hey, a bus drove by the other day and I thought about stepping in front of it. I don't think going for a hike in the woods for 30 minutes is going to take care of that. Yeah, that's kind of my opinion on that person's statement.
I agree with you.
Maybe they should look at self-care and understand that it's not just this, it's not something that just happens on the surface. Yes, a lot of self-care involves sitting back with a glass of wine, watching TV, sitting in a bathtub all day, or doing the spa day with the hair and the makeup, or buying bath bombs and lighting candles and incense. But a lot of it comes down to just reflecting and having inner peace and quiet.
And but sometimes, why are those things bad things? Like, why should you feel guilty about that?
They're not. We shouldn't.
Right.
We absolutely shouldn't. It's almost like they're necessary a lot of times because you're constructing, like, this proverbial altar, almost. Like, self-care is a bit of a religion or a ritual, like we said. And every ritual a lot of times needs an altar. Sometimes you have to, like, have the spa day or sit in the bathtub with the bath bombs and the candles lit, or sit in the woods and be at peace to really, like, focus your energy into caring for yourself. And
the hard work for if you can't enjoy those moments?
Exactly. And I was just going to say, like, even if I did want to be selfish for a day or two, what's wrong with that? There's nothing. Right. There's nothing wrong with occasionally putting yourself first. If anything, I'd say I'd be more concerned with someone that never puts themselves first. That's the person you need to watch out for and check on, because you can't keep going like that, and you're going to crash. You're going to crash hard.
Absolutely.
So I don't think there's anything wrong if I want to. And one of the things that I've always hated the stigma against was calling out from work when you're not physically sick.
Oh, yeah.
Like our generation has coined the term a mental health day. And when you say it, it seems like all the Gen Xers and the baby boomers roll their eyes. Like, they're like, oh, a mental health day. So you're calling out because you just want to be off from work. It's like, why is my mental health any less important than my physical health?
Right.
Especially in a job where we have to be mentally on our A game 24/7. We can't afford to get into the moment where the pressure's on, and that's when the cracks start showing.
Right.
So it's in the best interest of, if we're a medical provider, our patients, if we're a police officer, the citizens that we're protecting, if we're the people that we're speaking to, our callers, our officers that we're dispatching, it's in the best interest of everyone that we provide service to as emergency professionals that we be on top of our game. And if we're not 100% on top of our game, we're doing a disservice to our entire community.
Absolutely. Once that adrenaline wears off, all you have are your emotions and how you feel about things. And if you can't manage that or work with that, then you need to take a moment to do so, or else you're just not going to effectively move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been times working as a dispatcher where I've had really crazy calls that I've either dispatched for or taken, and you need to take a moment to just have someone else come over and monitor your area, and you take a moment to gather your thoughts and catch your breath. And
you need to process.
Yeah, you do. I don't like. I think it should be an option. If in a perfect world, it should be an option for when you had a really crazy call, no matter what your profession, whether it's dispatcher or police or fire or EMS, that taking a mental health day afterwards, not only be an option, but be encouraged.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes you need that time to process what just happened.
Absolutely. Or it's going to affect all your calls moving forward.
Right. You can't just keep going and going and going. Eventually that battery is going to run out and you're going to have to charge it. And I wanted to talk about, as we're talking about self-care, also talking about going back to last episode we did, the Pride episode. And I know since then you attended Pride.
I did.
And I wanted to talk about your experiences there. I feel like when we were talking in private, it sounded like that was almost a form of self-care for you, because you had the time to just be yourself and be completely open without judgment. And it seemed like this really like freeing experience. I wanted to know if you were interested in talking a little bit about that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It honestly shocked me. So as embarrassed as I am to say this, I kind of went into it with low expectations, kind of like, oh, people might judge me. What are people going to think? They're going to think I'm just like out here like, oh yeah, look at me, rainbows, all these things, because that's kind of how I've been, not how I've been brought up. I don't want to put it that way, but the culture of how this has all the course of my lifetime. So going in there, I didn't really know what to expect. And the first thing we saw once we found a spot to stand and wait for the parade were people walking down with megaphones and signs and telling us how we're all going to hell and how we're all sinners and we're terrible and all this stuff. And then I was like, okay, well, this is getting more interesting by the minute.
Did you feel like,
did you feel
when you saw that, like a slight like feeling that you shouldn't be there? Like, did you feel like nervous, like you wanted to go home at all? Or did you feel like more encouraged seeing that, like, no, this is where, like, I'm going to make a stand? Or was it neither?
Honestly, my first reaction was like, are we safe? Is this okay? Are they going to do anything? After that, it was just kind of like, all right, there's a lot more of them than there are, or a lot more of us than there are of them. And everyone else is ignoring them and having a good time. So it's all right. Let's just stick it out, see how it goes. And then once the parade started, I couldn't tell you what happened in the first like 30 minutes of the parade, because I was just standing there crying, just like tears streaming down my face. And I don't know why, it just like, it felt like such a relief, such like a comfort. It was like you said, a very freeing experience.
How did it feel going back to your 9-to-5, like after that? Like, I felt like when I've gone through experiences like that in anything, like whether it be like, so, like something that I didn't like that, or going on like what I call like a trying to figure out how to phrase this, like soul searching, almost like going on like that really long adventure where you have time to reflect inward. You come back and it almost feels like the world has opened up, you know?
Yeah.
Like you experience that. And then you go back to your 9-to-5, your Monday through Friday job. And while you're back in this environment that feels kind of gray and feels like everything's back to normal and very robotic, you feel almost like you're more like, for lack of a better term, like woke or awakened to like what's going on, you know?
Yeah, it definitely, at first I kind of walked in there and everyone's like, you know, what did you do this weekend? How was your weekend? And I told them where I was, and I don't know if I knew what I expected the response to be, but it was all so positive. And it was either like, oh yeah, I was there too. Or, oh, my best friend was there, or I wanted to go. And it was just very positive feedback. And then, like you said, it just kind of all went back to reality. But it's still like, looking back on it now, a couple weeks later, it still was just like such a positive opening experience. And I'm really, really glad we went. Yeah.
I think that too can definitely be related to self-care, in that sometimes you have to have these really, like I said before, like these soul search moments, like where it's like, this is what I have to do. I want to be connected with people that are like me, people that understand what I'm going through, a place where I don't feel pressured to bottle up my feelings, even though, even if the issue that's affecting you at that time may not necessarily be related to your orientation or identity, just having like a, having a community where you can go to and be a little bit more yourself than usual seems like it's really therapeutic.
That, and the night before we went to the parade, we went and met up with one of Rose's old college friends and some of their friends, and we just kind of sat there and all hung out, and we're all some part of, none of us were straight. I don't want to speak for everyone else because I don't know what everyone identifies as. But it just like the everything we talked about and all the different things that came up were so relatable, like talking about families and talking about experiences. And it was the most interesting and fun conversation I think I might have ever had, because I was just kind of sitting there like, wow, I relate to everything you're saying. This is so right. And I just didn't realize how not normal every other situation has felt for me until that very, very normal situation.
I feel like it was morphing for you to be open too, because they could relate to you. Like, I'm sure that, or I don't want to say I'm sure, but I can imagine that in your day-to-day life, especially prior to moving out west, it might be like your wife, Rose, was the only person who really, like, you could confide in to identify with these experiences. Yeah,
I mean, I definitely have other friends that are gay or bisexual and have talked to them like one-on-one or in small groups, but to be in a group where every single person can relate to you is so eye-opening.
Yeah, I in late May, early June, went down to Atlanta and had a similar feeling, because growing up in Baltimore, it's a very interesting culture where, like, it's that northeastern culture where no one really talks to each other, you know, like, so even though growing up in a predominantly African-American city, we all may have had shared experiences, it wasn't really the culture to be open about them. And then coming up here and living in towns where it's predominantly white and Hispanic and Asian, still feeling like I'm the minority. And really even now thinking about the fact that I don't really have too many like friends that are people of color. And then going down there to Atlanta, which is basically like the cultural center of African-American culture, and seeing seeing black businesses and seeing people like openly sharing their experiences, and all of us just having this cultural identity that we could relate to, it was really like freeing and open, you know? You didn't feel like you had to, you didn't feel like you had to talk a certain way or walk a certain way or constantly look over your shoulder, because you knew that you were in like-minded company. And I'm sure you probably felt something similar to that too.
Yeah, just that feeling of just being able to be like yourself. Yeah.
It's like, what's that?
Go ahead.
What'd you say?
I was just going to say, it's something that I wish more people could experience or would do experience. Maybe they do, I don't know, but something that everyone should experience. Absolutely. For sure.
It's sometimes those moments come once in a lifetime. If we're lucky, it's something we get to experience our entire life. It's something that if you do get to experience it your entire life, you definitely shouldn't take for granted. And if you haven't experienced it, seek it out. If you're part of a certain community, whether it be a religion that you identify with or your sexual orientation or your cultural identity or your race, look for like those groups of people, while being mindful, being open-minded and accepting of all cultures and all mindsets outside of that, provided that they're not hostile to you or your way of life. Seek out those groups where you can be with people and share, like, have a shared identity and have a shared experience, because that too is a form of self-care. You know, it all comes back to mental health and leaving and finishing your self-care ritual and being better than you were when you went in. And that's not going to be something that always happens within a day, a week, a month. Like we said, it's constantly evolving and it's constantly changing. The person you are right now isn't the person that you were a month ago or even a day ago. And the person that you will be a month from now is completely different from you. And all three of those people may have completely different self-care routines and issues that they want to work on in themselves. It's a sliding scale.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right. And it's also kind of terrifying to think about.
It is. I saw you post something earlier, and it actually really provoked some thoughts in me. It was something along the way of that you were still trying to find out who you were. And I thought about the fact that I was like, I don't know if we ever really know who we are. I think a lot of times other people know us better than we know ourselves, because we all have this kind of image of how we perceive ourselves, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Especially based on all the things around us that influence who we are.
That's another thing. Like, when I think about the person I was a year ago and the influences in my surroundings and in my environment versus the person I am now, they're two completely different people. I mean, we knew each other a year ago, and I feel like even you, like, you're a completely different person. You've grown so much in a good way. Not to say that the person you were before was bad at all, but you've grown so much, and you've gotten to this point where you feel like you can be yourself and you feel like you can be open. And even though you may not necessarily be where you want to be, you're a whole lot further than where you were.
Well, always. Thanks, Frank. Yeah, it's true. And I guess, like you said, it'll just keep evolving and we'll just keep changing and growing. And hopefully it's always for the
better.
And
even if it's not, every step, every step forward is still a step towards positive growth. As long as you stay on that track, I feel like we all falter sometimes. We all sometimes revert back to our old ways, revert back to our old habits. But it's going back to those habits. It's almost like Groundhog Day. It's you're starting back again, like starting the day over again, or starting like from back on the same footing you were like a week or a month or a year ago. But you have so much more new knowledge now. You've been through this. You've been here. Act like you've been here, you know, like remember how you got out of this before. Remember what the good experiences were and the bad experiences were, and take that and learn from it. You know, I think a lot of us, like we talked about, like how we fall out of our self-care routines when we get burnt out. A lot of us tend to like get in the snowball cycle where we fall out of our routine a little bit, and at least us going, oh, well, no big deal now. Like, might as well just throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I think the real key is recognizing that a single step back is not mean you're starting from the beginning all over again. Like, you can get back on track with your self-care routine, whether it be you want to exercise more. You faltering and missing a day of exercising, or missing a week of exercising, or a month, or even going a year without exercising, doesn't mean that you cannot go back out there tomorrow and start, and no one's going to judge you for it. You know?
You're absolutely right.
It's better to change late than to not change at all.
Absolutely.
Well, Annalisa, I know you've got plans tonight. I don't want to keep you for too long. And we've just about hit our 60-minute mark. So this has been really productive. And it's nice to see that we came back from our break with some new, fresh ideas. And hopefully we've both taken the time to embrace self-care as well.
Yeah, and I appreciate your philosophy sharing today. I think, I'm serious, I think it was really important and really spot on.
This, if the listeners at home and you couldn't tell, this was an issue that has been weighing on my mind for a while as I keep trying to develop my self-care routine. So it's something that I really wanted to speak about on the podcast today.
Yeah.
And along the way, we told all of our listeners not in the Southeast Pennsylvania area how to recognize a real cheesesteak from a fake one.
Also very important.
So
just want to yeah, the best, always. You know.
So for our listeners out there, you've been listening to the Laudable Podcast with Frank and Annalise. Be sure to leave a comment. Let us know what you thought of the show. Let us know about your bed cheese stick experiences. Let us know about your self-care routines, moments that you've experienced burnout, signs that you've recognized as being a alarm or a red flag for approaching burnout. Let us know about all of that, and let us know about what you'd like to hear in the next podcast. So I've been Frank, and that's been Annalise. And we'll talk to you guys later.